Hello, and welcome back to Two Scarves Gaming. In our last episode, we talked about why games are so great. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, you can go and check it out. We're emphasizing the single-player experience today, and there's quite a bit to cover, so we're going to get started right after a word from our sponsor. Hi, my name is Eric.
And my name is Jeremy.
And today on our episode of Two Scarves Gaming, we are introducing a very special guest onto our show, and he is now going to be a very crucial and permanent part of our show. So why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. Hello. My name is Evan.
Today, if you still don't know from the intro, we're going to be talking about single-player games. So, you two, what are your favorite single-player games?
It would definitely have to be... I have a hard time deciding between Hotline Miami 2 and Binding of Isaac, because they both have really good single-player campaigns.
Right.
And they have, like, a lot of, like, fun gameplay mechanics that are, like, smooth, slick, and fun.
All right, that's pretty cool. What about you?
Oh, I feel a lot of single-player games. It's quite hard to list it off the top of my head, but I think if I had to, the stuff that comes to mind would, well, definitely be Hollow Knight, for one. And some other stuff. I do remember liking the Assassin's Creed franchise quite a lot.
Assassin's Creed was pretty good. I only played like one game, but it was pretty good. Anything else?
Let's see. Nier Automata was quite good as well. And that ending, though, that was really something. It actually...
No spoilers.
Oh, right. No spoilers.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the ending was something.
I tried playing Metro, but it got too scary for me.
Metro 2033? Actually, you know, Metro is my favorite single-player franchise. Not that I'm a big purveyor of single-player games, but I really enjoyed Metro.
And yeah, the guns are nice. They're slick, and the enemies are fun to play against.
Have you played Metro?
I've been meaning to. I haven't gotten around to it.
It's the backlog of games.
I mean, backlog. It used to be free. That's how I got Metro in the first place.
Exactly. That's how like I got into time. Metro.
Actually, I think I got a copy of one of the games on Epic, actually.
Epic Games? Oh, I see. Oh, Metro Exodus?
Is it the new Exodus? Probably, right?
I think so. I'm not sure. It was one of the Metros, but something
because I'm
like
pretty
that.
Sure the only like game on Metro game on Epic is probably Exodus. Because it's one of the newer games that came out.
Yeah. Metro Exodus is... the new single-player game from Deep Silver in the Metro franchise, and instead of focusing on a linear story-based progression system throughout the world where you can, you know, make different choices to get different endings, Metro Exodus is actually open world-based.
Oh.
Yeah, which is really cool. So it focuses more on questing, and it takes more of, like, a Skyrim approach to the campaign than more than, like, a linear move-through-the-story, move-through-areas.
And adding on, it takes, like, the nuclear wasteland of Russia to a whole new level.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
Oh, by the way, if you don't know, Metro is basically a post-apocalyptic... Russian civilization.
Yeah,
you're like
yeah,
after the Cold War. Because someone decided to nuke almost entire of Russia.
Yeah.
It's now dead and cold.
So it's an open-world game with plenty of quests. This is going to be a really, really rabbit hole.
It's going to be a long... game. But yes, that's exactly what I love so much about single player games, whether they are linear or open world. But I obviously prefer open world. But I think with single player games, the flexibility that you have with, you know, making your choices and not having others, you know, come in and blow something up or kill you and interrupt your game. And oh my gosh, it's horrible. But yeah, I think I like the idea of having an open world a lot. Yes.
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 Okay. So, looking at your Steam profile, Evan, I see that you have around, I don't know, what, 300 hours on Dark Souls 3?
Something like that,
yeah. 270, 300 hours on Dark Souls 3. Why did you play it so much?
I don't know. The thing is, the first time I got into the Soulsborne franchise, it was with Bloodborne, and I went into a couple of minutes in that game. I had no idea where I was supposed to go, and I just gave up. So Dark Souls 3 for me was like, I consider my first actual foray into the series, because it's the only one I really bothered to really go through and try to beat. And honestly, the first time I started it, it was terrifying. I mean, you drop in and immediately what you see are these strange zombie-like things, and they have daggers and they're charging at you, and
yes.
You get out of the way by rolling on your back.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is I actually didn't know rolling gives you invincibility frames. So every time they attacked, I rolled away and tried to run back in after to attack them.
That's a recipe for disaster, as all Souls players know.
I didn't quite figure out how it worked until sometime during the High Wall of Lothric. So
I see.
So that was fun.
That was fun. Jeremy, any experience with brutally hard single-player games?
Hotline Miami is definitely really hard. It's an arcade-styled game where basically you can kill anything in one hit or in two hits, but at the same time you also die in one hit. And considering the fact that the AI has a longer, C range than you, and they have guns, it's gonna be quite difficult. But right. It's also what makes it really fun, because, if we end up pulling off, the entire level, it becomes, a smooth gameplay of, you hacking and slashing, through multiple enemies at once to reach your goal.
Right, yeah. So, I don't have as many hours as Evan on Dark Souls 3. Because I got frustrated, and because I died so many times. God, it's horrible. But on Metro, I played quite a lot of Metro. Not 2033, but I played a lot of Metro. What is it called? Metro game.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
Metro Last Light.
Yeah, Last Light, yeah.
Okay, so Metro Last Light is the spiritual and actual successor to Metro 2033. It focuses on the same protagonist, Artyom, which is, some Russian guy who is trying to kill mutants in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. No spoilers here, but I really enjoyed that game. It wasn't brutally difficult. It's more of a survival horror shooter. And much like your experience with Dark Souls, the first time I touched Metro, I was like, nope, none of this. Because, it's pretty frustrating. To keep dying over and over and not seeing your progress. And also it's kind of terrifying.
Very terrifying. The moment I see horror on any of the tags on the games I have, I just sort of shove it away in the corner. I'll look at that later.
Yeah, exactly. So Metro 2033 was the first time I touched it, I was like, it's really dark and there are things that are going to jump out at me from the tunnels. And it's not going to be good. And then there are whole exploration segments where you're walking inside a tunnel and you hear the drips of the water and it's dank. And then suddenly one of the people in front of you with the flashlight gets pulled to the side and you hear the screaming and you're like, let me just get out of here real quick. But you can't because it's a single player campaign and you're supposed to sort of progress with the story. And so that was the biggest thing about Metro. So when I played Metro Last Light, after finishing 2033, very scaredily, I guess. I was, a coward for all of 2033. I never took on, head-on engagements. Metro Last Light was, a first experience for me of the survival horror shooter, where you have to not only manage your ammo, you have to manage your energy, the electricity that you have in order to see in the tunnels with your flashlight. You have to manage your oxygen when you're on the surface, because, it's a radioactive wasteland. You have to put on a gas mask. And if your gas mask goes sour, guess you're dead. Yeah, it's pretty bad. But Metro is definitely insane. So Dark Souls, Hotline Miami, and Metro, right?
Yeah, also, I'm going to add on to Binding of Isaac. Think of Isaac, Binding of Isaac is dungeon exploring player builder. Kind of think of it as you start off with zero items, and then over time as you go throughout the dungeons in Binding of Isaac, you get stronger and stronger over time.
So roguelike?
Yeah, roguelike.
Is that?
Yeah, it generates a new dungeon every single time you play. So I think that's what a roguelike is.
Are roguelikes normally associated with permadeath?
Oh, and... yeah, you have to restart every single time you die.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's and it might sound like your stereotypical roguelike game, but it gets a lot deeper than that with actual dark story behind it.
Yeah, I see.
Mild dark story about a broken family.
I see.
You also have really dark, it also has a large emphasis on Christian ideals and the horoscopes.
Oh, that's sensitive.
And also the tarot cards.
Games don't want to touch that normally.
Yeah, but like they do it in a way where like it's part of the gameplay. Like there are items based on those ideals, like say Libera, which balances out all your stats.
Boy, no spoilers here.
I mean, it's not spoilers. It's just one of the items that you can find many in game.
Okay. Any experience with roguelikes, Evan?
I've played some. Okay, so as for mobile games, there's a game called I think Soul Knight. Yes. And I've played it a lot on my phone, and as it's a pretty fun game.
I enjoy it as well.
Yeah, and as for PC, I did get Wizard of Legend a while back.
Wizard of Legend, which is like Soul Knight, but with more pixels.
Basically.
And magic instead of guns.
And when playing, immediately I noticed in that game how easy it is to accidentally sort of like bump into stuff and then get your health depleted really quick, because it doesn't regenerate after each level, so each level. All the currency you collect, or at least all the currency I collect, would mostly be going into health potions, so.
Right, I see. The only experience that I've had with roguelikes, because I'm typically not really into the randomly generated adventure type game. Well, actually two, were Dead Cells and Enter the Gungeon.
Oh yeah, those are, I know for a fact, they're pretty good.
Yeah, have you played Gungeon?
I've heard of it, I've never touched it though.
Okay, Gungeon, it's like Dark Souls with rolling, but no Estus flasks. It's a roguelike, it's 2D, but not a platformer, and it's top down, and yes, it's actually really good, and there is in fact a story. It's also brutally hard on a bullet hell, which is why I stopped playing it. Because I'm bad at bullet hells. Every time, I can't tell where the bullets are. Anyways, because I'm blind. And then Dead Cells, which was much more impactful, and I liked it a lot more. And I actually finished that one. That one is actually Dark Souls. But as a 2D platformer, you're sort of like a dead person, right? You're dead. You can roll. There are Estus flasks. It's Dark Souls, but not really. There's parrying, too.
Oh, there's parrying in
Dead Cells.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's okay. Why I call a no you.
Yeah, okay, so in Dead Cells, basically there are three types of weapon categories, right? You have your melee weapons, your ranged weapons, and you have your shield. Melee weapons are kind of self-explanatory, so are ranged weapons. But shields, if you parry a hit, not only does your opponent take full damage and you don't take any damage, they're also stunned. So if they don't die from the parry itself, you can just whack them a few times and they'll die. And Dead Cells has tons of more mechanics, but you know, I really like Dark Cells as a roguelike. Dead Cells. I really liked Dead Cells as a roguelike because, I don't know, Souls-like. Yes.
Yes.
Evan, have you ever played like single player games that are like easier?
Oh yeah, so something I can definitely list, that is a word, list off the top of my head, is Wuppo. So you're a ball of fluff with legs, and you shoot gum.
That's, interesting, to say the least. I'm not too sure where to go with that one. What's your primary goal in the game?
Okay, so the plot starts with you being thrown out of your hotel because you keep spilling ice cream in the hallways. And basically, I suppose as you go through the game, you're finding a new place to live.
This is really weird.
This is the real life experience right here, you know? Get kicked out of your house because you keep spilling ice cream in the hallways.
Oh, but there are like I guess supernatural elements in Wuppo, and you get to fight giant fish and stuff like that. It's not just you looking for an apartment because you've been kicked out of your house.
It's no longer the real life experience, Evan. You ruined it for me. No. What about you? Any non-brutal games?
Can we count Nintendo? Kirby.
Oh, yes, we can count Nintendo Kirby.
Okay. And Mario.
And Mario. Well, I've always sucked at Mario. I don't know about you.
I've played Mario, the original Mario, on an emulator, and it was really hard, actually.
It is really hard. I cannot tell. I have not cleared a single Mario game. I have not beaten a single Mario game, ever.
I know for a fact I beat New Super Mario Bros. 2 3DS version, like the one with all the coins everywhere. Mario itself is pretty fun because, you know, the basic platformer, but at the same time, it's, like, aesthetic.
Aesthetic.
The aesthetic.
I don't know, I've never liked the Mario aesthetic.
Oh, really?
This is so sad. I've never liked it too much. I was, like,
I like it. It attracts all ages.
I was like, why are you a small Italian man that breaks bricks with your head, and why do you jump?
Technically, he breaks it with his fist.
Stop getting pranked by Bowser. Every time Mario finishes a game, Peach is not in the castle where Bowser is. I don't know. English words. Yes. okay. What about Kirby?
Kirby is by far my favorite single-player series. Always. There are some Kirby multiplayer games, but like a lot of the games are centered around like single-player experiences.
Primarily single-player?
Yeah, with like side multiplayer mini-games.
Right.
The campaign is by far amazing. You have like, you start off, usually Kirby starts off with like, you suck, and then you blow out like debris that will kill your enemies instantly.
I feel like you could have phrased that a bit better.
Let's ignore that. But nowadays, you can just inhale and copy abilities like electricity, where you can literally zap things if your small pink stub hands set things afire with literally your own body.
You are a god. A god among puffballs.
And yes, and when it gets to the boss fights, that's when it really kicks off. Because, like, combat feels amazing. It's easy, but at the same time, it feels like you're, like, this strong hero that's literally beating a villain up or something. And when you get to the final boss fight of any Kirby game, it's worth it. The final boss has the best music, has the best, like, looking like forms and stuff.
I would hope so. I wouldn't want a disappointing final boss.
Yeah, they're all bangers.
I wouldn't
all
want
of
a
them.
Final boss.
In every single Kirby game, they're all a banger.
I wouldn't want a final boss that's a furball that shoots gum.
That sounds like an amazing final boss.
any non-brutal single player games that I've played?
Why not try Fire Emblem? I know you play that.
Dude, Fire Emblem, I only play on the hardest difficulty, permadeath characters.
Oh, right.
It takes me months to clear a game.
Okay, let's forget wow. Fire Emblem.
Okay. Fire Emblem for casual players. Casuals. Fire Emblem for casual players is actually quite easy. You just throw your units into danger zone and watch as your husbando or waifu bodies enemies.
Bodies enemies.
Yeah, just deletes them.
Oh, that's what you... Okay.
I what did you think I meant?
No comment. You can't prove anything.
But yeah, Fire Emblem on easier difficulties with no permadeath is quite easy. I'm a stickler for suffering, though, so... It's just not my sort of game, you know? I have to have some challenge there. I don't think I've played any super non-frustrating single-player games.
I've played more mild ones, and when I do try to play something frustrating, I usually just don't play that much of it, like, every single day. Because, like, I don't want to break myself to the point I'm going to commit a war crime against Atlantis and the sea fish people.
That was so specific. What game are you targeting?
I don't know, but I have bad experiences with seafood and good experiences.
Okay. Well, let's not commit war crimes against Atlantis and the sea fish people. What was I going to say? Oh, JRPGs, actually.
I have no experience with that whatsoever.
I think maybe I've played one... I don't know. I'm not entirely sure what constitutes a JRPG.
Tales of Berseria?
Because is that really an RPG? I'm not sure if it qualifies.
Okay, no, it's more like a Japanese just game.
It's just a Japanese game,
it's
yeah.
a game with anime. yeah. But okay, so JRPGs used to be my favorite genre of game. I think they still are. Final Fantasy has never been my cup of tea, and I know I just offended half of, like, the 36 listeners that we have. Thank you for listening, by the way. I know I just offended, like, half of you, but I actually prefer Trails of Cold Steel. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
I've heard you mention it. That's about it.
Okay.
I've never played, like, a JRPG in my life. It never was my cup of tea either.
Okay, so Trails of Cold Steel is a Japanese RPG that centers its gameplay around... you're a student who goes to military school, Rin Schwarzer, and you have to fight a war, and it's really cool, the combat system, because it's not like a normal JRPG where it's turn-based, like, situational combat where you don't have much choice over your character's actions other than, like, fighting or item usage. Trails of Cold Steel actually incorporates movement into its combat, where every turn your character can either, you know, fight, use a combat art, which is like a super, you know, heal, use an item, or try to escape, or you can move, you know? And with this movement, it's like, if you position yourself correctly, there are some boss battles where the boss can't even touch you, unless they have an AoE attack or a ranged attack, because you're constantly just kiting them. And I really like that sort of depth of gameplay that Trails of Cold Steel brings, but, you know, I guess that's not brutally difficult either, even though I played it on the highest difficulty. It wasn't that bad. It was still pretty hard, though. But yeah, very nice.
Very nice.
Okay, so I think that we should move on to why people should play single-player games and how they can get into them.
Single-player delivers, like, an experience that no, like, multiplayer can't fill. It's like, you did all of this by yourself. You're amazing. You did it. I know that for a fact, because when I play Gravy Games, that's what I feel when I beat the ever-loving hell at the final boss. Every time.
It feels amazing. I just got an image of Kirby shooting gum at the final boss.
How did you get there?
Weppo. That.
I mean, that's. What. I mean, if he swallows some gum and spits it out again, I mean, that's not too far from what he basically does.
Imagine if we, like, get a new Kirby game, it's like a gum ability. We already have a ball ability where he just bounces around as an actual ball.
What?
There's an actual ball ability. It was like in.
Does it do damage?
Yes.
What if you fall off an edge?
You die. And also, you can also take contact damage by yourself, which is like a drawback.
Wait, so your main source of damage is hitting enemies as a ball, but you could take contact damage when you hit enemies as a ball?
It's one of the more weird, funky power-ups that don't really work out, and overall, just terrible.
Masochist Kirby?
Whoa.
Okay, okay, hold up.
Anyways, continue, you know, so why should people play single-player games?
I suppose, for me, it's just that the reason why I play way more single-player games than multiplayer games is in multiplayer, it's either cooperative or competitive. And I'm not entirely too enthusiastic about the competitive part of multiplayer games, and I'm also not great at them, so there's that too.
Right.
And as for cooperative games, I think they're great, but single-player games, I feel, are more they're better at perhaps delivering a story, because for a multiplayer game, you need things to be balanced, and it's for the co-op games, it tends to focus on the fun of the game between you and someone else that's playing. And the game is just sort of sidelined as long as you and the other person are having fun.
Right.
But for single player games, it's really immersive. You know, you get sort of drawn into the story, you get really invested in it, and it's sort of an experience that only you have. Right. Well, I mean, a bunch of other people playing the same game are probably having the same experience as you now. But in that moment, it's something that that's only shared with you. And I think that's really amazing about single-player games, and yeah.
Right. It's interesting that you bring up, you know, like it's something that only you get to experience and, you know, everyone else who's playing the game. But with the rise of choice-based single-player games, where the choices you make affect the ending of the game that you get, or, you know, what calamities befall your character, you know, this now changes the experience for everyone.
Oh, are you talking about stuff like Until Dawn and, like, Detroit Become Human?
Until Dawn and Detroit Become Human, I personally didn't like at all. I hated Until Dawn because it's a horror game, and I just hate horror games. And I didn't like Detroit Become Human because it was stale. I like action games. I like adventure games. I don't like games where I play a robot whose sole goal is to, like, out-robot humans, or out-human the human, I guess. I don't know.
28 stab wounds.
Yeah, Detroit Become Human, I personally didn't like, but with the advent of choice-based games, like stuff like Skyrim, you know? Dark Souls 3 with its multiple endings.
Dark Souls, for the most part, is really linear, but there are some stuff you can do throughout the game that changes what ending you get. Right. Like, really specific side quests that you would basically never be able to find on your own.
Or Hollow Knight, because in Hollow Knight, it's possible to have a different experience because none of the bosses are mandatory.
Well,
A lot of them are mandatory.
Most of the bosses aren't, actually.
Basically, I think for Hollow Knight, you just have one base ending, or rather the first ending that you're probably going to get, and then you can fight more and more bosses to eventually reach, not the true ending, I wouldn't say, But reach more endings.
Oh,
by the way, I just realized something. I remember seeing a mod video of Hollow Knight where instead of like the main character using a blade, he has a gun.
Oh yeah, a hollow point.
Oh no, it's so funny.
It's just a tiny little ghost wielding an AK-47.
But the great thing, the thing that I loved about that mod is that it looked like it was viable because you know how the equivalent of an Estus flask in Hollow Knight is the soul that you collect from enemies.
Yeah.
When you fire their gun, your soul depletes.
That definitely adds like a new choice of difficulty. Your way of method of survival is actually now being used against you because you're actually using it to try to kill something.
Right.
The thing I noticed is the only video I've ever watched of the Hollow Point mod is during, well, spoilers, but when they were shooting the gun at the bosses, I noticed that every single time the bullet hit, their soul kept refilling.
Well,
so,
yeah.
So I'm not sure if that's something that got changed, that would be changed later.
I mean, it rewards accuracy. Mm-hmm. If you hit an enemy, you get soul, but if you miss...
The thing is, to be fair, the enemies in, or rather the bosses in Hollow Knight are all going to be much bigger than you.
That's true.
Yeah, they're pretty hard to
unless
miss.
You're fighting Hornet.
Unless you're fighting Hornet.
I hate Hornet.
Wait, no, don't hate Hornet.
I hate Hornet.
Don't hate Hornet.
Silk Song.
Yeah, I'm excited for Silk Song.
Silk Song hype.
You know, considering Silk Song, which is going to probably be like $15 or $20, it's going to be available on Steam. And I don't know, is it going to be available on any consoles?
It might be on the Switch.
It might be on the Switch. Won't it be on PlayStation?
I'm not sure about PlayStation. I know they released Hollow Knight for the Switch. I haven't heard any news about PlayStation.
Okay, right. But anyways, talking about Hollow Knight Silksong, you know, if you want to get into single player games, Silksong is a great place to start. I think the Hollow Knight franchise is a great place to start.
If you want something more like mild or not difficult, because like Hollow Knight is still technically difficult.
I think the difficulty adds to the experience. You know, I think that because Hollow Knight is difficult, you're really like invested in, you know, the events of the game, and it's like, you know what, I spent hours trying to beat this boss, you know, I'm going to pay attention to the story, I'm going to pay attention to what's happening in the world, and that creates like a really magical single player experience. I don't know, I just think that it's a great entry point for anyone who wants to get into them.
Yeah,
the thing about Hollow Knight is I think it's an absolutely amazing game, but games like Hollow Knight and Dark Souls, they take a little while to get used to, because the main thing about them is they just drop you into a world, they don't tell you where to go, they don't tell you what your quest is, you just keep walking until you figure something out.
Dude, I got lost in, what's like the town that you return to?
Dirtmouth?
Yeah, I got lost in Dirtmouth. I could not find my way into the Forgotten Crossroads. How was I supposed to know you're supposed to jump into a well?
Yeah, so...
Forgotten.
Yeah.
If you're starting with a single-player title, it might be better to start with something that maybe guides you a little more and maybe try to jump into stuff like Hollow Knight once you're a little more comfortable with finding your own way.
I feel like when it comes to... I feel like Nintendo does that well because like, it starts off with like, games like... good for all people that are like not new to a game and people that are not experienced with games, because Kirby and Mario, they have an easy learning curve. It also has a hide and master, but it's easy for like players to understand how to play the game. Also basic tutorials that like allow the player to like figure out what they're supposed to do, how to like achieve objectives.
Yeah,
and they also make it also like super satisfying, similar to like a harder difficulty like
boss fight or something
game. It basically just gives you the same experience, just doesn't offer that much challenge, just like introduce you to those curves.
Right, I see.
And then if you want more difficulty, the game provides that difficulty to get you more used to that curve.
Right.
And like difficulty. Like, Mario has, like, those special levels that are hell hard as hell.
Right.
And Kirby has, like, a boss rush after the game and, like, New Game Plus mode with, like, a time trial.
Right.
Mario has special levels?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, like, the special worlds.
Huh?
Special worlds, like...
I'm just gonna mention
spoilers right now. I'm sorry. But usually, after you beat a Mario game, there's gonna be a new world plus where there's gonna be... a new extra special world with really difficult levels after you beat the main game. And it's only achieved sometimes by, like, doing like specific like requirements, like getting all the collectibles, etc. But usually that doesn't happen, and you usually have access to it instantly.
Right. That's... I've never finished a Mario game, so, you know, because it's hard for me. And yeah. I suck at platformers.
Kirby, they provide you with this really hard, like, new game plus mode. And also they provide, like, a time trial, like, new game plus mode as well, where you play as a different character. So you have a new skill set. Based on, like, previous skill sets, you learn from, like, copying abilities and etc.
I see.
And overall, and there's, like, finally, like, two boss rushes. The basic boss rush, which involves all the basic bosses and mini-bosses that you have to fight, which you're used to. And then the X bosses, or, like, the special ones, special bosses.
Pantheon of Hellenists.
More health, do more damage, and wacky attacks. I remember playing, like, Planet Robobot, which is one of the newer Kirby games on the 3DS before Star Allies.
Right.
And one of the final bosses had an attack which will literally instantly kill you.
That's pleasant, isn't it?
No. I would love to play a game like that.
I just suck at platformers, so, you know, I'm just...
Kirby's very forgiving naturally, of platforming.
I'm just naturally bad at platformers. But the actual first... Okay, disregarding Flash games, the first experience that I had with a true single-player game was Pokemon Black and White. Gen 5 of Pokemon Black and White is my favorite generation. Have you guys played Pokemon?
I've played it a lot when I was younger. I don't do nearly as much as that now.
Yeah, me neither, but what about you?
Mario, again.
No Pokemon?
Nah, I was never a Pokemon fan. I don't like RPGs.
Okay, well, Pokemon was my first real single-player game that I was really invested in, that I like spent the time to collect everything and complete the Pokédex and everything. And the biggest thing about Pokemon Black and White that I enjoyed was sort of the accessibility of it. Like, the tutorial isn't immersive, you know? They obviously take you out of your world to specifically show the player, this is what you do, this is how you catch a Pokemon, this is how you murder other Pokemon, now go and fight everyone that you can.
And get your mom arrested for, like, child endangerment.
They're not murdered. They faint on the ground in the wild.
Didn't Gary Frittata die?
No one can prove this.
There's a graveyard full of Pokemon.
No one can prove this. No, Pokemon is a family friend.
In Pokemon Black and White, there's something called the Celestial Tower. And when you first enter, the music gets really eerie. And then you go up to these slabs. And guess what they are? Pokemon gravestones.
Oh, no.
And the Pokemon that you encounter when you're traversing the tower, they're the ghosts of those dead Pokemon.
But besides all of those and all of the, you know, terrifying Pokemon entries and all of the disturbing subplots in Pokemon,
Yamask is a dead human.
Oh. Balloons? There are balloons that kidnap children.
Yeah. We've gone off topic, haven't we?
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, Pokemon was my first real single-player game, and I loved it. The entry barrier was, you know, very friendly to new players. The story that it told was amazing. I think Gen 5 was the last great generation of Pokemon, and I know I'm going to die for that statement now. But I think that Gen 5 was the last great generation of Pokemon. And I think that because I was so immersed in the story and how the story presented a conflict between a character's truth and the ideals of a character. You know, the game is so old. It's 10 years old now. If you haven't played it yet, I don't think you're going to play it in the future. If you do, though, that would be great. But you encounter this man named N, right? And he was raised by someone named Getsis. And he was manipulated, right? Getsis isn't his real father. No one knows how he was born, but he can talk to Pokemon. He can, like, hear their cries and respond. And that's really cool because what N wants to do is he wants to save Pokemon. Team Plasma is trying to liberate, big quotes, they're trying to liberate all Pokemon. They're not actually trying to liberate all Pokemon. They're just trying to cause trouble. But N actually believes in this goal. N believes that Pokemon shouldn't be treated as animals that are forced to fight, you know? And this was like my first exposure to a philosophical argument in a game, you know? It's like, if humans are able to, like, befriend these Pokemon without having to catch them and forcing them to fight, then why don't we? Why do we force them to fight, right? And the entire game is a complex story of the truth of the matter, which is that, like, you know, N is being manipulated and Pokemon actually don't mind, and N's ideals, and even like the player's ideals at some points, where it's like, am I really fighting for the correct side? Or, you know, is Team Plasma, are they the good guys? And I was really just entranced by that game. That was my first single player game. That's how I got into it. That's how I advise you guys get into it. I don't know. That's how I advise everyone get into it. I don't know. It was insane. What about you guys? First single player game.
Oh, that's, I don't have anything right now. Jeremy, you wanna...
Super Mario 3D Land.
Really? Your first single player game?
Yeah.
Had you not played a Mario game on the DS?
Actually, let me think about it. I did actually. But it was like the regular like Mega Mushroom. You know, remember the Mega Mushroom, right?
The what?
The Mega Mushroom on like the DS. I forgot which game it was called. Like New Super Mario Bros.
Oh, yes. New Super Mario Bros.
I played it when I was like stupidly young, like around 5 or 7.
Right, I see.
It was a first time exposure for me to games, and I had no idea what I was doing.
Very nice.
But like slowly I realized, hey, I can grab stuff. I can shoot fire. I can destroy everything when I'm literally a giant walking a plumber man.
Oh yeah, I forgot Mario was a plumber. Okay, yeah. Okay, continue. Sorry.
Yeah. Then later on, when I went to buy 3DS, I got like 3D Land. It was like a new world for me. It's like, oh my god. He doesn't have to walk right, left to right. But he still has to walk left to right.
What?
It's just in 3D. Oh. He can move up and down.
Imagine being bound to a two-dimensional plane.
Oh, no.
He always was and never will escape until it's a galaxy game.
That came out more grim than I wanted it to.
Kind of. And then Mario is by far a great introduction to single player. And portrays the fact that, like, hey... You can do this and do that. Isn't this a cool, wacky world that you can play in?
Now go and fight a giant turtle, dragon, mutant, lizard thing.
Kirby takes that a bit more I feel like weirdly, Kirby's though. Because, more... like, you go from, like, fighting innocent, like, trees what? To, like, some demon from,
fighting,
like, a crown.
You're fighting the trees? Why?
Do you remember Wispy Woods? Basically, you fight a giant game, sentient tree.
Sometimes you even get to fight two giant sentient trees.
Yes. Or sometimes you get to fight a giant sentient tree with eggs.
Okay.
you know what I'm talking about, right?
So you start off with a tree, right? Then you go to weird, wacky sea animals, weird volcano animals. And then near the end of the game, you fight some weird, otherworldly, godly power that you don't know how you got there. I'm serious.
I feel like that's every Fire Emblem game ever.
I'm serious.
You start off fighting some mercenaries and you end up killing God.
That's also Persona. That's Persona too. Okay, so Kirby. So let's say in the first game, you usually just beat the king of like the domain, right? That's in the first ever Kirby game ever. And then later on, like Kirby's Dream Land,
mm-hmm.
you fight some weird, otherworldly like space demon entity that was created by some sort of ancient civilization. That is literally the same as Kirby, that can copy other abilities. And you do so using a magical love wand stick. And the first time was a magical rainbow sword.
You know, what I think Kirby does is that it actually does this. It, like, makes your enemies harder across games. Fire Emblem, in the span of, like, 40 or 50 hours, you've gone from, like, a mercenary band that has, like, amateur swordsmen and swordswomen, or mages and stuff... And suddenly, you've destroyed the church, and have now started an insurrection and established yourself as king or queen.
I feel like scaling intensity and like, you know how like things get more serious later on in games, like in single player campaigns. Like, it's this Miles story, but then gets. Yeah, I feel like that's another like great aspect to like some single player games that use this mechanic, because like it makes you want to stick and like see what happens next, like. How much farther can I go before I eventually destroy a giant sentient flower?
That was oddly specific.
Kirby again. Triple Deluxe.
Okay, anyway.
I'm a big Kirby fan, by the way.
Yeah. Evan. earliest single player game?
All right, so Flash games aside, because, you know, they're Flash games, it must have been something, not on the Wii. On the Wii, I think, were all cooperative games.
Oh, wait. Let me guess. Super Mario Galaxy.
Yes, that one. But
yes!
But I'd say, I'm not sure if that counts as cooperative. Was that two-player?
One-player. It has a two-player mode, but it doesn't affect the
single player. Predominantly.
Okay, so it must have been, like, each person switching controllers or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I suppose Super Mario Galaxy would be my first single-player game. There might be others before or after that, but that's the first one that I can think of.
I remember playing that when it was, like, 10 or something. I don't know what was going on. It was the first time I didn't have to walk left to right. It was so great. Remember playing the first game. There was the ice flower or something. Or maybe it was a video.
Yes, ice or fire flower, yeah.
I don't know, but my favorite power-up in those games were the flowers.
Yeah, of course. I know for everyone's favorites are the flowers.
I didn't play the first game, I think, but I played the second. But when I started watching videos about the first game, I realized I wanted to try out the ice flower because Mario as an ice sculpture that can move and freeze things. Very nice. I want to be that. I want to do that.
Anyway, impact that it had on you?
I mean, I'm not entirely sure how I'd say it impacted me because playing that game, it was such a long time ago. I can barely remember anything about it. But what few memories I do have about it is that it was incredibly fun. It was creative. It was...
good.
Give me more adjectives.
It was immersive?
Immersive. I mean, you just had a bunch of things to do there, even if you didn't know what you were doing. Like, you were just jumping around on these giant balls that seemed to have much greater gravity than they should have.
You could have phrased that better.
But even
this
if
is
you
a lack of innocence.
Absolutely no idea what you were doing, it was still incredibly, incredibly fun. And I think it's all of these early experiences with games that really helped me to see, I mean, how fun they are. I honestly don't know any other way to say it.
Right. So, you know, getting into single-player games, what games would you recommend now? Games on the market, like, you know...
Start off with Nintendo, always. You
know, I'm assuming with our age group, right? Like, Nintendo is sort of, Pokemon is dead, it's a dead franchise, I hate it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I don't hate it because it's Pokemon. I hate it because there's a lack of creativity, and it seems
it's literally just copy and paste.
It seems that they're just out for profit. Pokemon Sword and Shield, or actually, no, not even Sword and Shield, because that was actually a half-decent game. Sun and Moon, when it came out, was a clearly unfinished game. You've heard me rant about this before, but you haven't, Jeremy. It was a clearly unfinished game. So then, you know what they did? 6 months later, they released Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. And guess what? That was an unfinished game, too. It had, like, three updates. Pokemon X and Y, the first game on the 3DS, had, like, two updates. And they were both to add content that was, like, actual DLC, like, new legendaries. To the game. Sun and Moon, it was a whole bunch of hotfixes and patches.
Pain. God.
And with Sword and Shield, I am still upset at Game Freak for not including the national Pokédex in the game.
But they're re-adding the new Pokémon.
Yeah, they're re-adding it as DLC, and not only that, but they're also including new story with the DLC. They're including a new world, new places to go. This is something that's never been done before. It's awesome. But not really, because Pokemon is still bad. But anyways, back to recommendations for people entering the single-player gaming world.
If for all ages, especially try out Nintendo games.
You could say for our age.
I'm including everyone. Everyone now is
everyone
now involved.
Should include.
I'm tracking everyone with
Everyone
me.
Should try Nintendo games?
Yeah, they're always... They give out the greatest ease and probably the more easier... like single player experiences, and when you finish like playing like most of them, you can like move on to like more like harder ones. They are a great introduction to the single player franchise, and you should definitely try out like Kirby and Mario.
Right. You
don't try Sonic. Most of it is dead.
Sonic is Sega.
Sega's part of Nintendo.
Okay.
It is.
What? Okay. Is. Sure.
As for recommendations for new players entering the scene, I'm honestly not really sure. Of course, Hollow Knight is a great game, but it's somewhat difficult to get to if you're new. The thing about this is, I'm a bit of a masochist when it comes to games. I will sit there for hours just to kill one boss.
Yeah.
So I'm honestly not sure if any of the games I played are actually suitable for new players.
I mean, how about for those hardcore gamers out there?
Oh, for those hardcore gamers. I mean,
or not hardcore gamers, people who want a challenge, you know, and want to get into the gaming scene.
People who want a challenge. I mean, of course, all of the usual contenders, Soulsborne, Sekiro, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that I began enjoying stealth games, starting with Assassin's Creed, and those are always fun. So with Dishonored 1 and 2 and Death of the Outsider, I think those three games are, I suppose, stealth, but...
They can be loud, right?
They can be absolutely loud.
Yeah.
But it's really, it has multiple ways you can approach a situation, and really, you can have a lot of fun just completing the game your own way with all the powers that it offers you.
Right.
So I think that's, yeah.
Very nice. How about Metal Gear Solid 5?
Metal Gear Solid, oh boy, okay. So I think Metal Gear Solid 5 must have been maybe my first actual foray into Metal Gear.
Metal Gear, I see.
Metal Gear.
Because I've seen other people play it, and I just remember thinking, what a weird game. And that didn't really change once I got into Metal Gear Solid 5.
So probably not good for entry.
It's one of the best stealth games and one of the best meta games I've ever seen.
It's like the plot is incredibly weird, but if you get over that, it's... Well, it does discourage killings, which is, I suppose, a good thing. But it does... It has a difficulty setting.
It does have a difficulty setting, but like you still have to think your way through challenges and stuff.
Yeah, and so it's a combination of stealth. It can be open combat, and they give you lots of gears and gadgets, and you can go through lots of different routes. So it's definitely a good game to go into.
Right. I personally enjoy first-person shooters a lot. I enjoy like being in the middle of a firefight, and you know, I can't say anything about real life firefights. I would hate to get into one of those.
I prefer any kind of game stuff.
Hopefully never.
Combat.
But like, I prefer, you know, first person shooter. So I would definitely recommend the Metro franchise.
I prefer anything chaotic.
Okay, but like Metro isn't too hard. It's if you're not good with horror, don't start with Metro.
Spooky, scary.
Again, like Evan, I'm a bit of a masochist when it comes to games. I enjoy a good challenge. And Metro does not have a difficulty setting.
If you want to, like, try something chaotic, not the masochist kind of chaotic, like, the fun chaotic, start off with, like, Hotline Miami, series.
Let's just... A small pool, right? Yeah. Hotline Miami, I feel like, is... still a bit hard to get into. It's not one of those games where you just pick up and go, because when you come into gaming, you expect there to be like a health system. You don't expect to die in one shot. And Hotline Miami, I think, is surprisingly complex. The gameplay is surprisingly deep
Yeah, it is. You have like noise.
Exactly. It's like noise and detection. And, you know, for the average entry-level player, I don't think it's something that's as directed as one would like it to be. I mean, with Dark Souls and Hollow Knight, you may not have a clear goal, but once you get the ball rolling, you know that you just have to kill the undead or other monsters,
yeah,
you know?
You got a
and
point.
With Kirby and Mario, you're told what to do. You don't have an option. And
oh yeah, that's definitely true.
With Metro, it's also a very linear progression system, but again, I prefer the first person shooter thing. But I think that something that I think all of you will agree with me with is, have you guys played Skyrim?
No. My laptop can't handle it.
Okay, never mind. Not Skyrim.
I know plenty about it, but I've never played it myself.
Okay.
My PC would die.
How about...
That was your one fault.
That was my one fault. I was like, yo, if we all think of different things... when single player games come to mind, but like Skyrim is the definitive, and then nope, I haven't played it.
We are both uncultured, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. I mean, maybe I've never played it myself, but maybe Breath of the Wild?
Oh.
Yes.
I have not played it, but I've seen a lot of gameplay on it.
If you have a Switch or you have around $500 to spare, pick up a Switch and Breath of the Wild, because I think it's the definitive Nintendo single player experience.
The more recent one, though.
Of the previous decade.
Wait, what about Cadence of Hyrule?
Nah, that was a rhythm game.
I don't even know what that is.
So you know Crypt of the Necrodancer?
No.
It's like a single player, like, so rogue game.
It's a roguelike. Time your movement and attacks to the beat of the music. Otherwise, you die. No, otherwise, I think there's a penalty. I've never played it, but I think Cadence of Hyrule is like that. But Breath of the Wild, I think, I mean, Pokemon Black and White came out in 2010, so it's not the number one game for me. But Breath of the Wild is definitely, I think, this decade's definitive single-player experience. When it came out, there was so much buzz about it, and it generated hype like no other game has generated, and it reinvented a franchise. And it made it relevant again. So yeah, single-player game. Very nice.
Amazing.
Spicy. Okay, well, anyways, thank
full
you.
Full of flavor.
Full. Painful to the tongue. Anyways, you know, thank you for listening in to this episode of Two Scarves Gaming. We hope you guys enjoyed. Again, our wonderful sponsor is Anchor, which you can use to go and make yourself a podcast. We're recording on an iPhone.
And also, if you heard, banging, it was me, accidentally moving the desk around by accident.
Yeah, we're recording in a classroom with an iPhone. So, you know, really goes to show that anyone can make a podcast, you know?
Also, I'm a poor man that has a poor laptop, which is so I have not played any single-player games at all. They're all too big, and they all are, too hard on graphics.
Oh, dude, I forgot to bring up Witcher. But anyways, that's okay, because we can bring up Witcher in an episode about, story-driven gameplay and stuff
Kirby,
like that.
Kirby, my favorite.
Oh my gosh. But anyways.
Oh, wait, I don't think Kirby's straight-driven, never mind.
Anyways, thank you so much for listening in. This was episode 2 of Two Scarves Gaming. If you guys have any criticisms, feel free to message us on Instagram. Our email is on our Instagram as well, or it will be on our Instagram once I make the email and put it on the Instagram page.
We did not think this through.
We did not think this through at all. You can feel free to contact us. You can send voice messages through Anchor. If you have any criticisms, anything that you'd like improved or covered, if you're a gamer yourself and you'd like to appear as a special guest or have something covered by the three of us, that would be great. Just shoot us a message and we'll get right to it if we have time and we don't already have something planned. So again, I'm Eric.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Evan.
And, you know, joined by my two wonderful co-hosts, it's time to say goodbye. Thank you so much for listening in to this week's episode of Two Scribes Gaming. See you next time.